Hey everyone, it is Michael Ellsberg, and I am so excited to be live on the line here with one of my idols. I gotta pinch myself that I'm even getting the chance to talk with her here, Danielle Laporte. And we had over 900 people register for this call, so a lot of you are streaming on right at this moment right now. I see the callers going up and up and up on the phone and the webcast. And this is going to be a great hour. I think it's going to be life-changing for a lot of you. Danielle, are you here?
I am here. I am so here, fully. I'm so excited.
Awesome. I feel it. That is your specialty, is being here fully. And we're going to be talking a lot about that. So the title for today's hour is How to Succeed in Business by Revealing More of You, Not Less. How to Succeed in Business by Revealing More of You, Not Less. And I think this is a really important call and topic that doesn't get talked about that much because most people have it the other way, that you have to, there's some standard operating procedure you have to follow, there's a corporate culture you may have to fit into, there's the way things are done that you'll look weird if you don't do it. And I think so many people out there are laboring under these impressions, and I was for a long time also in my writing and my career. And Danielle is someone I've looked up to for a while as being someone who completely flips the bird to that entire idea. And in fact, has Danielle, you've based you're not just successful in spite of showing who you are, and you have a very distinct personality that we'll be getting to know. I believe you're successful because you show who you are so boldly and so loudly. How did you come to have that philosophy that that's how you're going to operate your business and your career?
Lots and lots of pain.
All right, we start off with pain.
Yeah, it's the journey of shrinking, of keeping your mouth shut when you want to speak up, of not saying what you think needs to be said at the boardroom table, of signing documents you think, I really shouldn't be signing this. And, all those things, that contraction, that eclipsing, that silence of who you really are in that moment, that'll lead to, lawsuits or breakups or really pissy feelings or just feeling like a fraud. Feeling like things are, you're a bit pinched and, done with that. That is not ideal. That is not the space I want to live in. That's not fun. It's not optimal. So really experience
why,
the contrast.
Why does most of the world, and I included myself in this for a while when I was starting out my career, why does most of the world not have this philosophy? Why does most of the world have the opposite philosophy, which is, I got to button up, I got to do what looks right and what is acceptable? It seems to me that there's an enormous amount of fear around avoiding that way of thinking. What's keeping everyone in line?
I think it starts when we're infants. We cry because we're cold, we're hungry, we're tired, and someone says to us, but you're okay. You're okay. And that messes with, your synapses, because your body, your being, your psychology is saying one thing, and, the external reality, an authority figure is telling you another thing. And then we go to school, and, you know this better than anyone, having written about education and uneducation. And there is a right answer, and there is a wrong answer. You got the right stuff. And that means if you don't have the right stuff, you're you got the wrong stuff. You got the wrong answer. And we are rewarded. Our culture is set up to reward us for fitting in. And that's everything from corporate policy to big box stores to organized religion. And all of those things can be good. You can thrive in those situations if you're conscious about it and if it feels good. I mean, the problem is it becomes soul crushing and toxic when those things don't feel good and we do it anyway.
Now, you have a really interesting personal story around this. And everyone out there, the way I got to know Danielle was that I interviewed her for my second book, The Education of Millionaires, which she just referenced. And she is a a banner story in a chapter I have about building the brand of you. And the whole idea of the chapter is basically that you need to be radiating who you are specifically. And if you're radiating some kind of conformist model of what you think you should be, you're just, it's sort of like join the herd and no one's going to pay attention. But if you radiate specifically the core, the kernel of who you are in your branding out there, in your business branding, people are going to be attracted to that, or at least the right people are going to be attracted. So Danielle, you have been an iconoclast for a while, starting with your educational background. You were rejected from art school, is that correct?
Yeah, I still have that rejection letter.
So art school is somewhere where tends to attract the nonconformists already. So how do you get rejected from art school, and what does that say about you?
Well, you know, I think really my, what do you call it, not my resume, my portfolio, I really think my portfolio did suck hard. It was pretty static. And not meant to be. I remember sitting, I was trying to get some credits before I got accepted, so I like went to this summer class, take art history, and I remember sitting in this class and I just thought, you're all buying this? This is such pedantic, conformist shit. And this isn't what art is, this analysis, you're sucking the life right out of what that artist was probably going for. So, you know, I already wasn't feeling right before I got in there, but maybe I'm justifying being an art school reject. But I want to go back to something you're saying about the herd and what you radiate. And I think you can actually radiate a false persona. You can radiate inauthenticity, and people will show up. I mean, you know, we're buying bullshit in the millions, right? This
mm-hmm.
works. But you're not going to sleep well at night. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel less than. You're going to feel shrunk. Sex won't be as good. Your skin won't be as clear. There's going to be a sense of vacuousness and meaningless in your life. So bullshit does sell, but it doesn't feel good. I think that's the conundrum, is that it sells.
What do you say to someone? This is what I hear a lot when I talk about these kind of things, and I'd love to hear what you say to this. People say, oh, well, that sounds so great. That sounds so idealistic. But, you know, I got to pay the bills, and I can't afford to risk, alienating customers. I can't afford to risk pissing off my boss. I got to pay the bills. And that's the one I hear all the time. Or a variant on that is, oh, well, I'll express my individuality once I make it. You know, once I have freedom, and once the payday has come, then I can be free to be who I am. What do you say when you hear those kind of things?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's some wisdom to being strategic and not pissing off your boss. I mean, there's things I still need to do. there's a line that I need to walk sometimes, and that is smart. That's wise. The trick is to know why you're doing it. If you're going to conform, if you're going to be quiet, it's got to be coming from the right place. The argument of I'll be myself when I arrive, it just doesn't work. First of all, you never arrive. You never, I don't know anybody who's living artistically, and I don't mean, you know, as a, quote, creative type, but anybody who's really expressing themselves and putting their all into whatever they do, whether they're you know, CEOs of widget factories or they're writers, who feels like that they've arrived.
Mm-hmm.
From the outside, I've got some success. I got a great book deal, and I live in a warm, lovely house in a great neighborhood. Those are all great things. I feel like a failure all the time. And I finally learned to accept this. This isn't a neurosis. I have talked to my shrink about this. This is part of being artistic.
In fact,
this
is our callers heard about your shrink.
I knew that the
mic was on when we started. Talk about revealing yourself.
I'm really okay with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, every time, whether it's like love making or business or the post you write or the product you launch, if you really are going for it and putting it all out there, you will think to yourself, I could have done better. And I've learned to, like, love that feeling. I'm just like, you know, every time I get off stage, I think, I give myself a B+. And I dig it. I think that was great. That was a fucking great B+. And I'm happy for those applause. I gave it my all. There's more. There's always more.
I love something you just said about that people are always striving. And I think that is, there's so much wisdom in that. And I just spent 2 years interviewing some of the wealthiest people on the planet, literally billionaires, and there's only about 1,000 of them, and I interviewed a bunch of them. And I have yet to detect a wealth level where people are like, you know what, I'm cool, like, that's enough. Everyone I meet, they may not be striving for more wealth, but they're certainly striving for something, maybe a bigger impact, you know, bigger deals, more followers on their social media site that they created or whatever it might be. So your point there is so important, that at every stage in our life, we're always going to have a choice between something that may get us more material results in the short run because it's predictable versus something that's a little less certain, but that's more true to our heart. And there's never going to be some magic moment where it's like, oh, okay, great, I've got the IPO now, and now that I'm wealthy, I don't ever have to worry about what anyone else thinks. I've seen firsthand that that's simply not the case. At every wealth level, there's always this trade-off. It just happens at different kind of levels of magnification.
Yes, I think you will always want more, and when you accept that, then you can move into this place of realization that's what it is to be creative. That's what it is to be on your own leading edge. That's what it is to evolve, to always, you know, to be pushing. Now, there's this really key line about, like, striving to be and striving to attain. And this isn't, like, just about money, because, you know, this is so... I can't tell you how pertinent this is to, like, where I am right now. You know, here I am currently in my, like, vocational journey. I'm in this tunnel. I've got, like, it's 3 weeks until my book launches. You know, it's pub date. And this is, you know, for me right now, this is all about getting on the New York Times bestseller list. Mm-hmm. I wrote this essay on my site a few weeks ago about, you know, the mystique of the New York Times bestseller list and why you do this as a writer, and you're using the metaphor of, like, this is my Olympic run. I want the gold. And this is antithetical to, say, someone like Seth Godin's perspective, which is, you know, don't run that race because it's a corrupt race.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the New York Times, there's lots of ways to finagle and finesse to get on it, and it's not measured properly. And, like, I know, you know, we know this. Politics is corrupt. The Olympics is corrupt. It doesn't make you not want to be mayor. It doesn't want to make you want to not get in the game. But back to the striving point. Now, here I am in this tunnel of, like, I'm focused on it, on this achievement, and at the same time, I've got this whole new question that's up for me, like, as a being, as an entrepreneur, as a writer, of, like, I want to be done with the striving. When am I done? When am I done with that? When is it enough? And the answer is, I don't know. I'm living with this uncertainty. It's very uncomfortable. Will I feel like I've arrived? What if I don't get on the list? Am I going to be devastated? Yeah, for 2 days, I'll get on with things. Like, I'm not over, you know, my ego, ouch. I get on with the next thing.
And what you're saying suggests to me, I think you've put beautiful words to something that I haven't expressed as clearly ever, but I've thought it before, which is that the kind of people who are striving now aren't likely to be, once they get that supposed payoff, aren't likely going to enjoy just hanging around the house for the next 40 years or hanging by a pool or hanging on an island in Fiji or whatever it is. There's something that our kind of people actually enjoys a certain amount of striving. So maybe... And I mean our kind of people, I mean everyone on this call who most likely has some kind of entrepreneurial bent, we enjoy striving. So let's get comfortable with that and kind of strive in an optimal way where it's neither, burning us out, nor is it party time on the beach for the next 40 years. There's something something in between there where it seems like you're carving that out for yourself really well.
Yes, this is it. It's the why and the what. And I've loved the intellectual pushback I've gotten from different audiences, like, you know, my, quote, spiritual friends, and I say that, like, so affectionately, and I'm one of them, and say, why do you need that, Danielle? Does your ego need that? And I go, fuck yeah, my ego needs that. I love my ego. I don't have a contentious relationship with my ego. I have one. I am human. I may as well learn to love it and to use it in a healthy way. And then you have sort of the anti-marketing indie publisher kind of perspective. Why do you need it? It's a corrupt system. And I go, I'm compelled by this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I need to do. And what I've learned is I'm now in this place of, like, so much less judgment about what I want. Mm-hmm. And it is helping me just be on and be brighter, like, in my mind and in my heart. It's like, look at that craving. You want, isn't that interesting? Let's see what happens if you go for it. Oh, that felt good. Oh, that's not good. That doesn't fit. So I'm not judging my ambition anymore. And I'm open to my ambition shifting. I don't want the same things I want now that I did when I was 20. And I also am reaching that, you know, I'm gaining a certain kind of wisdom. I'm earning a certain kind of wisdom where I'm just like, this is a race I got to run. You can't say to somebody who is broke that money isn't going to bring them happiness.
Mm-hmm.
They need
to
see if it will or won't.
Mm-hmm.
You just, like, support them on that journey. I'm happy with being curious.
What you're saying reminds me of something my wife talks a lot about. My wife teaches mostly to women, and she talks a lot about how women in particular have been told to ignore their desires and that, for whatever cultural training we've had, there's this premium in the past on the ideal of the mother kind of putting her children first, putting her husband first in the past, you know, being the selfless, nurturing being. And Jenna talks a lot about it, and it sounds like you're talking a lot about here, giving up that past training and really, as a woman, feeling empowered to claim your desires for yourself. Can you talk a bit about the kind of gender aspects of this perspective you're bringing up here?
Brother, this is the diamond of that I have been polishing and rubbing for so long. It's like, this is what I know to be true right now. Could change my mind next month. Your desires are where it's at. Your desires are where your power is. It's where your potential is. It's where the momentum is. It's where the sustenance is. And I think in our culture, Western culture, we have our entire relationship to ambition and goal setting absolutely backwards. So we want the babe, we want the boat, we want the bucks. It's all out there. This is all about, you know, so much about material attainment. Fine, wonderful. Run the half marathon, get your hardwood floors, get the guy, get the ocean view. I mean, you know, really all I want out of life is linen sheets and enlightenment, right? And a fireplace. Okay. So there's nothing wrong with those things and wanting them. It's the motivation behind this, and this gets back to the root of, you know, what are you striving for? So I think if you get clear on how you want to feel, completely shifts your relationship to goal setting, because everything we're doing, whether it's for SEO or to make our first million or to hit the list or to be in love, is being driven by a desire to feel a certain way. Like everything you eat, everybody you hang after. So, hello, why don't you get clear on how you want to feel? Why don't you start on the inside? And then, so you look at your core desired feelings, and I guarantee you there's probably just 3, 4, or 5 of them, because they keep repeating in every area of your life. You think, okay, I want to feel connected. I want to feel affluent. I want to feel beautiful. I want to feel free. I want to feel powerful. what's going to make me feel that way? And you realize maybe you don't need $1 million to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you need more yoga and a farm. Or maybe you realize, you know what would make me feel close to God? A six-figure salary, because it feels powerful. Like, whatever.
And this is, you're one of the few people who teaches about business out there who also is very open about using the term spirituality. And you even refer to some of your missives and beautiful essays and thoughts as sermons online. And so most people aren't used to thinking about the words spirituality and business as having anything to do with each other whatsoever. In fact, they're completely separate in most people's minds. And like many other things, you have the total opposite perspective on that. Tell us a bit about how you see spirituality and business intersecting.
Well, I think from the most basic perspective, you spend how many hours of your life working?
Yeah.
You know, 40 hours of your week, a third of your life. A third of your life is working, a third is sleeping, a third is doing everything else you do. You may as well love it. You may as well enjoy it. You may as well feel pleasure. And I think all of those states are spiritual. I think all of those things lead to awareness and mindfulness. Well, not necessarily mindfulness. That's a kind of another subject, but consciousness, thoughtfulness. So make it count. Make it count. And let's get really real. We have an epidemic of meaninglessness in our society. Like, I feel incredibly optimistic about where we're going. And I think I don't feel compelled at all to, like, save the world. I don't think things need to... I'm not setting out to, like, change people. But mediocrity is pretty fashionable.
Well, this is such great material and so counter to so much of the stuff that we hear out there about, you know, hitting your nose to the grindstone and hitting the goals and in a very linear kind of materialistic way. And we have so many people on the line. We have close to 500 people on the line between phone and webcast, and I want to make sure that we have open it up for discussion in this hour and answer your questions. Before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about your book. The occasion, everyone, for me interviewing Danielle is that she has a book coming out in several weeks in late April, and I, as everyone knows, love books. I'm an author myself. I'm passionate about books, and whenever someone has a really awesome book coming out, I want to support them to get that word out. And so we're doing that here. And I've had the privilege of reading the advanced copy of it. And it is such a whack in the head. That is the phrasing I used in the copy I wrote. It's like if you're in a rut, this is the automatic get out of rut pill the rut ejector. So tell us, before we go to questions, tell us about the book. What was your intention with writing this book, and what do you hope what message are you hoping to spread through this book?
Well, someone told me of the book that it was like a mixed CD, and that it was a criticism. It was an agent, and I really owned it. I was like, you know what? It is. This is a mixed CD of sermons about giving yourself permission to A, want what you want and really want it, and B, go after it. And, you know, my stuff is labeled a lot as like tough love with extra love. And like
tough love with extra love.
Extra
I love that.
Extra love. And I can go for that as long as it's got the extra love piece. It's a very pragmatic approach to how you look at what you really want. You know, what are your dreams, your waking dreams really mean? Mm-hmm. Is that your mother's dream? Is that something you, like, inherited? Or is that really what you want out of life? And if, you know, once you get clear, which the book is all about you getting clear on what you really want, then, you know, you're sort of honor-bound to go after it. otherwise, you start to wither.
Yeah.
So, you know, and sort of the gestalt of it is like it's really about taking the entrepreneurial spirit into every area of your life. So it doesn't matter if you're, like, working for the government or if you're, you know, trying to make $1 million off your blog. This is about going for it with your eyes wide open.
Here's a beautiful, very short passage from the book. The book is called The Firestarter Sessions, and it's coming out. When is it coming out, Danielle?
April 17th. You can pre-order
April
now,
17th.
But like April 17th, it's in those old things called bookstores. You can actually go in and buy one.
Here's a beautiful passage that just sent shudders through me. So many people are looking for it. Their big life purpose, and those words are capitalized, by the way, big life purpose. Becoming you is your purpose. You are the very purpose of your existence. Realizing what lights your fire and floats your boat, that's your life purpose. What else could it be? Tell us about that. That just was such a counterintuitive jolt to me. I'm so used to the idea of thinking of a purpose as here's this thing I want to achieve. I want to change this aspect about the world. I want to solve this problem or be known for such and such brilliance or creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And you say becoming you is your purpose. Tell us what you mean by that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, what happens when you become you, when you do what feels good, you actually become, you're of service. I mean, I think what's behind the question for so many of us about our life purpose is how are we going to serve? And how am I going to get what I think I want out of life? I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. So, you know, the Dalai Lama says the purpose of life is to be happy. Like, could it get any simpler than that? So I think when you go after what's making you feel good, what brings you joy, and it doesn't matter what that is, you know, hopefully it's moral, you grow, you prosper and however you define prosperity, and you actually become of more service to the collective. You've got more energy to give, you've got more wisdom, you've got more money, you're brighter, you're vital. You're like a contributing member to society. And the irony is it's not the easiest thing to do, and it's the easiest thing to do, to just be yourself.
Paradox. It's not the easiest thing to do, and it's the easiest thing to do. So we have so many people here who I know are bursting to be in discussion with you, and we're going to go now to questions and answers. Get your questions together out there. If you have one on the phone, you can press *2, and we'll actually bring you on the line to ask it of Danielle. If you're out there on the webcast, you can submit your question via the form on the page. And before we go to the questions, I just want to make an appeal. You know, I'm not getting paid to do this call. I don't have any affiliate link or anything like that. I just do this because I like to bring to you people whose message I really believe in, and Danielle is one of those people. And she has been working on this book so hard. I have read it. It is, you know, I'll be honest who this is for and who it's not for. If you're the kind of person who likes a really linear book where it's like very, very clear, like first you do this and then only when you're done with that, do this. And then only when you're done with that, do this. You probably will hate this book. But there's a saying I like that a good brand repels as many people as it attracts. A good brand repels as many people as it attracts. And I think Danielle is a walking, living embodiment of that. You know, the people who are into the super linear, hyper-rational kind of stuff will probably be repelled by her message and this book. But the ones who will be attracted, which I suspect might be you if you're on this call, is if you're looking for a way to really feel into what you want to be doing with your business and why you're doing it and what it means to you, and can imagine yourself running your business in a way that feels in complete alignment. So there isn't this huge split between your 8 hours of work and then your 8 hours of whatever else you do. And everything is an embodiment of who you are, just as Danielle was talking about. So what I love about books is that for however many bucks, you know, 18, 19 bucks, you can get the wisdom of someone who has been at this for a while, coming up with this wisdom and working hard to express it really clearly. So I really appeal all of you to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, do yourself a favor and pre-order this book.
If you come to my site first, you get goodies if you pre-order now. Like you get like a tattoo and you get stuff. So there's fun stuff on there.
All right. So yeah, get your stuff at, what is your site?
DanielleLaporte.com.
DanielleLaporte.com. Go get your stuff, get your goodies. So now let's go to some Q&A. We've got a ton of questions here. I will start with one here from Jeffrey in Austin. I love how you take the wimpiness out of the concept of letting go. The aspect of using will and still practicing the letting go is a potent combination. Can you speak more about that? I love that question. I love how you take the wimpiness. That's something I think you do with a lot of what you do is take the wimpiness out of it.
What a beautiful question. I don't think getting what you want is about going with the flow necessarily. I think it's about showing up. And showing up takes courage. It is the opposite of that wimpiness. It takes conviction. It takes clarity. It takes devotion. You have to have stamina. And then you have to let go. I've showed up. I've spoken my truth. I wrote my heart out. I did a great proposal. I've given you all my love, whatever it is that you're doing. And then you can't will the results. Like, you can't control them. And that's where, you know, the striving turns into strife. Or not getting what you want turns into grief instead of, like, a lesson. So I think, you know, my current motto, like, I got to do, like, a note card or something or a screensaver about this. You show up and you shine and you let it go. And that lesson became so clear for me a couple months ago. I was in New York. I was meeting with an editor from O Magazine, from Oprah, and I had built up so much story and anticipation around this meeting. It's like, if I get into O, it's going to change my whole life. I was saying to people, like, if I get into O, it's going to change my grandchildren's lives, right? My kid is 8, okay? And because of all of that, I was a little bit contracted during the meeting. You know, I wanted to say the right things. I wanted to hit the right notes. And the meeting was good. You know, I think it was, like, moderately impressive, you know? And obviously not impressive enough because it didn't lead to an article. It may take a while to get onto Oprah's speed dial. But after I left that meeting, I'm walking down Fifth Avenue, and I actually felt this sense of euphoria because I just thought, I'm done. I'm done with trying to will the results. I showed up. I was the best that I could be. I would have been better if I wasn't worried about the results.
Mm-hmm.
But fuck it. I'm going to be myself and just see what happens. So that is the non-wimpy approach to going with the flow.
Danielle Laporte is very rarely wimpy. Hey, all you callers on the phone out there, I forgot to tell you, the way you make it known that you want to ask a question is to press *2. So everyone, raise your hand if you want to ask a question live on the line. If you're on the phone, press *2. And while you all out there on the phone doing that, let's go back to one submitted from the web. Here is a very heartfelt one. This comes from, let me just find it here. Let's see. This comes from Joel, who is a fellow Canadian. Joel says, I look like a hobo because I'm severely balding and I'm young, early 20s, so I feel I'm hard to relate to. What advice do you have?
Oh, I love bald men. I think... I think bald is aerodynamic. So just as my husband says, like just shave it down to the wood, number one on your clippers, and be you. Be going to, you know, just be proud of being bald. Like just like women got to learn to love their muffin top.
What would you say? I mean, I took from this question that it's not just about looks. There's something internal going on where Joel is feeling inadequate or somehow spiritually not enough inside.
The question becomes, do you feel like a hobo? So there's two levels to this. One is, external presentation. Does it matter? Absolutely, it matters. This is part of like really showing up and shining. Look your best, and that sounds trivial, but it really isn't. You need to put thought into your presentation. I think it's part of being conscious. Do you feel like a hobo? And the answer is why? Is this like family of origin stuff? Do you not feel like you're keeping up with the Joneses? So you gotta figure out why that feeling is there, and then what can you do to not to combat, but to dissolve that feeling. So maybe you feel like a metaphorical hobo because it's like really time to get it together. It's time to like take that class. It's time to ask her out. It's time to ask for a raise. It's time to quit your job. It's like your psyche knows, you know, your psyche is nudging you. I'm feeling less than. It's time to up my game.
Mm.
Or maybe you're feeling like the metaphorical hobo because it's just some shitty old programming that you got from your family or something that some high school teacher said to you in science class that stayed with you that you never released from your mindset. So you gotta figure out why that feeling is there, and it's either a letting go or it's more of like a solution.
This is what I love about the way you teach is that you always show both sides of the paradox. So you just said, you know, all the stuff that one might expect around, no, you're not really a hobo inside and you can change that. But then there's always that other, you always bring out that other side, which is where the non-wimpy comes out as like, well, maybe you are. Maybe it's time to step it up. Maybe it's time to play a bigger game. And the power comes when you can hold both of those views at the same time so you don't get so caught up in either side and that there's that creative tension between the truth and the non-truth of both of those.
Well, this is why I'm down on positive thinking. Because I think so many times it's just a Band-Aid and it completely invalidates your actual experience. So somebody's saying, like, you know, I feel like a bum, and someone goes, no, you're not. You're a winner. And inside the person's going, no, I feel like a bum. And now I really feel like a loser because you just told me I think I'm a winner and I don't feel like it. So it's like, you know, you're feeling something. It's legitimate. Let's look at it.
Let's go to a caller on the line. We have a bunch of people with hands raised. So let's go to Dallas, Texas. Dallas, you are live on the line. Are you there?
Is that me?
That's you. Hi.
That's you. Hey, this is just such a fantastic call, webinar, et cetera.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, but with both of you, I appreciate so much of the direction that this has gone, and especially, Michael, you've been talking about how we don't hear enough of these conversations, you know, talking about the mixture of spirituality and business, and I know, Danielle, from reading a lot of your stuff and mixing sexuality in there, and so this really is fire-starting to me, and Danielle, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is I've been following some of your stuff and bought the digital Firestarter sessions. And initially, when I saw some of your work, you know, I was really bummed. I loved it. But I was bummed because I've always been a soul fire starter and so much of my work reflects what you're doing. I'm like, great, now I can't do that because she's already doing that. And then I went, so you're not going to be who you are because someone else is who they are and there's similarities. And so I think I saw that you did a post about that at one point. Obviously, when we're using words and we're dealing with energies, those are going to be reflected in other places in the world. And so could you speak a little bit about how we show up? I actually had a gentleman one day tell me, well, you can't use that word because I'm already using that word. And I thought, really? Mm-hmm. So to speak a little bit about how we can still stand in our power and still shine, even if someone else is shining in a similar way. Does that make sense? Without yeah. having those weird feelings of, oh, gee, I can't do this now because it's going to appear that I'm using his or her stuff.
First of all, nothing is original. So we all just have to agree on that. Everything I say has already been said. It will be said again in an infinite amount of different ways, different expressions. So there's that. You know, what I'm on about is thousands of years old. And you are original. So there's nothing original, but you're an original because it's your lens and it's your story. Okay. But here's a semicolon to that. You need to tell your story. So it, you know, telling your story, it roots you, it makes you believable, it makes it lived. You know, personally, I'm so tired of like 21-year-old life coaches trying to coach 40-year-olds about how to get through their 30s. Like, you know, what? So
Danielle is 35. Okay, is that old enough to be a life coach?
No. You need to tell your story, and in order to tell your story, you actually need to have put in some analysis into your journey. Like you need to earn your authority, and you need to be transparent. Those are all difficult things to do: introspection and transparency, public transparency. But I put like another semicolon on this. You got like, since we're going with semicolons, I should have at least three. I think, and I'm getting off track, but I feel like this is useful. Because what's the title of this call again? Something about being more of yourself, not less of yourself.
Yes. How to succeed by revealing more of you rather than less
right.
of you.
I think there's a fine line when you are, if you're going to stand in any place of authority or you're grabbing the baton to like teach, if you just basically you want to be useful, it's not about being fully transparent all of the time. So I see this happening online with some bloggers who are putting themselves in the position to be teacher. They're sharing they're oversharing. They're sharing too much of their journey. So it's like, I do not want to hear that so and so financial coach is having financial problems. He or she needs to, and I think it's done, you know, the intention's good, which is I want to be real, I want to be authentic, I want to be accessible. But I actually think that's irresponsible as a teacher. I think you need to go through your lessons, and then you reflect on them, and then once you're through the hell, then you turn that hell into a teachable moment, because you can't drag your audience through it with you. If you do, you become a diarist, and diarists have their places. They're not teachers. That's entertainment and inspiration. So I got a little off track there. So if you're in the shit, don't talk about the shit until it turns into something beautiful. And back to your point about showing up and being original, comparison is toxic, right? So, like, don't even do it.
Well, you just are absolutely powerful. And Michael, having this platform for her and both of you, go, just go, go, go. I mean, this is
thank
just
you.
What the world needs. Thank you to both of
thank
you.
Thank you so much. Let's. There's a couple of great questions on the web board that I think you're going to riff on well here. This is a Koan-like one. I'm going to do two here from the web board because they're so juicy. Here's a Koan-like question from Suzanne in Hawaii. How do you turn futility into fertility?
Only from Hawaii. I just got back from Hawaii, swimming with dolphins. It was magical. How do you turn futility into fertility? Everything is progress. absolutely everything is progress. This is one of my most strongly held beliefs. I actually have a whole thing about you shouldn't hold on to your beliefs too strongly. But if I did, this is one of them that I hold. Any astrophysicist will tell you that technically, scientifically, physically, the universe is always expanding. And you are part of that universe. So we are only moving forward. You can choose to believe that or not believe it, but Einstein would agree with me. So if you buy into that, it actually throws a whole new light on things that no matter what you do, it's moving you forward on your journey. When people say, you know, how do I get out of being stuck? I say any decision is a good decision. Just keep moving. It's any progress. Movement is better than stasis. So, And I also think it's great to analyze your failures. And one of my least favorite New Age isms is that there's no such thing as a mistake. There are such things as fat fucking mistakes that you will never want to do again, like hardcore regrets, like you done, gone, and screwed up. And I think, like, really analyzing the pain of that and what drove you to do it is so useful, because then you can, like, never do it again.
Mm. Lovely. We're going to take one more from the Q&A from the web board here, and then we'll go to the phones. If you're on the phone and you'd like to ask another question live, as our caller from Dallas did, go ahead and press *2, and that'll raise your hand. This is from Nancy, who's in Buenos Aires, and I used to live in Buenos Aires for 6 months, actually, so this is lovely to have an international audience here. Nancy writes, I am a 65-year-old mother of six grown, successful, happy children who have their own spouses and children. I get excited about new books I read on diet and nutrition. I get excited about new exercises I learn. I tell them, and they feel threatened and like I don't approve of them as they are now and what they eat or do. I'm in great shape, have lots of energy, and travel the world, but, quote, being myself seems to alienate them. Do I need to tone it down or change what I say or just not be around them so I don't make them mad?
What a complex question. Way to go on having six kids. He deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. Well, are you telling them? If we were sitting down having tea right now, I'd say, are you telling them how to live? Because that's a drag for everybody. And if you aren't, and you're just showing up and radiating and being you, highly possible, sometimes it will be threatening to other people. And this is the part of being sincere and showing up that isn't easy. Sometimes you lose friends. Sometimes you piss off your family members. Sometimes you don't get invited to Christmas dinner because of who you are. And ideally, it doesn't always work out this way, ideally the fulfillment of being yourself sort of eases the pain that comes with that. But I think the bottom line is it's not a painless journey being authentic. It's just, it's rife with discomfort and rewards. There was something else I wanted to say. Oh, my other question would be, do you want to be around them? Does being around them give you joy? So, you know, one of my favorite insights from a friend was after we were hugging goodbye, and he said, I feel more like myself around you. And I said, I feel more like myself around you. And I just want to hang out with those people. And I used to think that was really selfish and narrow, and I wasn't being expanded enough. But I really make a conscious choice to hang out with people who help me and support me to feel more like me. So there might be choice.
Once again, the both sides, I think there's a theme that's emerging here, is seeing both sides and being comfortable with both sides. One, taking responsibility, expressing my passions in a way that is coming off as preachy or judgmental to the people I love. That's one side of it. And the other is, you know, part of me is expressing my passions, and I need to just do that and let the chips fall where they may. And I just love how you keep coming back to helping us see both sides of these issues. Let's go to a caller live here on the phone. We have someone from Seattle. Seattle, you are Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. I just messed that one up.
Seattle, you are.
Seattle, raise your hand again, and we'll get back to you. I just unraised your hand, and now I can't find you. We will get back to Seattle. Sorry for the technical difficulty here. Let's go to Monterey, California, which is really near where I am. Monterey, California, you are live on the line. Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. You're there.
Hi.
Hi. What's your name?
Oh, I am there. Oh, you confused me when you said Monterey, but it is Monterey County. I mean Carmel, California.
Oh, okay. Carmel. Sure. Hi.
And I just want to first off say thank you to Danielle for turning me on to Michael this morning. So I'm so happy to be tuning in and to be hearing both of you at the same time. I was also up in San Jose, and I saw Danielle. You were fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
At the Louise Hay Conference. And I'm so excited because I'm at a time in my life where corporate America was stuffing and stifling my spark. And the universe took me out of that situation, and now I am trying to redesign and trying to figure out who I am going to become in this second part of my life. And it's very interesting, and I'm just absorbing all this wonderful information and trying to figure out, you know, what is my life purpose and what is my dream and where do I fit in all of this? So it's exciting and daunting and exhilarating and a little frightening at sometimes.
So I have a twist on that life purpose question. So, and you don't have to answer this now, but for those of us who are like living in that question, what is my life purpose? I would just say, what do you want it to be? Just choose it. Like it may not come to you. It's not, I think we have this perception that it's like, it's ordained, like, an angel or some sign or a CEO is going to say, like, this is it for you. And just, like, just pick it. This is, I want my life purpose to be, and
right.
That's it for now.
And because I know some of my other past lives were ordained, quote, unquote, and I'm not going there again, that I think that's another reason why it's so fun to actually just redesign and enjoy the ride, as they say.
You know what I love about this call is we're talking, here we're talking about billionaires and past lives in the same context.
That's what happens when you get Michael
and Danielle
together.
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Let's now go back to our Seattle caller. I will now unmute you. Seattle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. What's your name?
Hello, I'm Janet.
Hi, what's your question?
So thank you both for having this opportunity in this call. And Daniel,
Hello? Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. I am so – okay, sorry, everyone. This is completely my fault. I'm slightly new to working these dials. Let's get Seattle, raise your hand. I promise. Now it's like a mission. We got
to
get your question asked. Raise
Janet
your hand
from
one more
Seattle.
Time. There you are.
Thank you for
okay.
the thing.
Okay.
You are on.
I'm
you
back.
Are on.
Hi.
There you are. Hi.
Awesome. So I was just in the middle of thanking you both for this call and saying that, Danielle, I had the pleasure to meet with you once and loved you the moment we met, and you're just so awesome and been following you ever since. And my question was, what practical steps do you take for confidence building? I mean, this whole idea of being authentic and for me in the process of trying to reinvent myself, sometimes when I feel phony or it doesn't feel real, you know, I struggle with having the confidence in feeling as if, no, this is me and who I say I am is really who I am. But believing in it and saying it is it's conflicting.
Where did we meet?
Oh, I did a style statement with you way back when.
Oh, wow, that was a past life, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
a few things. There's an exercise I've got in the Firestarter sessions, actually, called glory boarding, where you go through your life. It's a list. It says, you know, I accomplished, I sold, I was rewarded, I gained, I achieved, I raised. And you just you know, we're so accustomed to, like, looking at the things we don't have and we didn't get in our failures. It's really great. And so, instead of a vision board that's about your future and what you want, how about, like, a glory board of everything you've accomplished? And you sit back from that, and it doesn't matter who you are. You're going to go, wow, I've done a few things. I dug myself out of a few holes. I've walked a few miles. And I think when you have that, you use that as a touchstone. I mean, you just do it mentally. It's a great walking meditation to think of all the things you've accomplished. That's what you refer to before you go into the meeting, while you're doing your resume, before it's time to speak up. It's like, I've done it, and I'll do it again. And I may fail, but I'll get up again. Secondly, I think you need to ask for the love sometimes. And that may be as simple as, you know, getting in touch with 10 clients or 3 past employers and asking for a testimonial. It may be as simple as, you know, doing one of those often cheesy but often useful 360-degree interviews with people. Say, like, what do you think of me? Actually, I have a worksheet. It's in the book. It's also on my site. You can just go grab it for free. It's in the free resources section called the Ask a Friend Survey. And it really takes a lot of courage to do this. And you can. My stipulation is you only send this to people who love and respect you. And essentially, in like 5 different questions, you're saying, what's great about me? When have I been at my best? What do you think my strength is? Sometimes we need that. And I don't think there's any. I think it's actually a strength to go and ask for those, to ask for that kind of reflective, not always objective support.
Yeah, those are great ideas. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope it's helpful. Michael, are you there?
Hello, you have me. Hello. I'm sorry, everyone. It's been mostly smooth with a few chops there.
Yeah.
Do you hear me? Okay, great.
It's totally working. We're here.
All right. Roll with the punches is Danielle's message, and I am learning as I go. So we are gearing up at the top of the hour here, or the bottom of the hour, and we'll take one more very quick – this is a quick question, and I'm sure you can give us a quick answer to it. And that is right here from Christine in Lake Tahoe. Christine asks, what one thing do you think is responsible for your success?
Sincerity.
That's beautiful.
Which is different than, there's a fine line. It's not just about being authentic. It's like, you know, I sincerely want to be of service by being myself.
Beautiful. Well, Danielle, thank you so much for joining us this hour. It's just been such a privilege. You know, one of the things I always say on these calls that I love about book launches is that people who often get paid tens of thousands of dollars to give a talk, there's something funny happens when they're doing a book launch and they'll share their wisdom freely and widely because they want this book, the wisdom of this book, to get out. And so we're all the beneficiaries of this. Thank you so much for sharing with us, Danielle. And everyone out there, again, you know, I don't have anything I'm getting out of this other than I want you all to succeed, and I get something when you succeed. And so I would strongly encourage you to read this book. I wouldn't be spending this time and going through the effort to have Danielle here if I didn't believe you'd get something out of it. So do yourself a favor. All of this wisdom continues in spades in Danielle's awesome book, The Firestarter Sessions. It's available for pre-order now on Amazon. Danielle has just told us that you get a bunch of goodies, including a tattoo. I'm very curious to find how you transmit a tattoo virtually. Oh, okay. You're not going to, like, sit there and ink us.
I'm not bringing out my ink gun for anybody, no.
Okay. So please, everyone, go do yourself a favor. Danielle, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you, Michael. And I just want to say in closing, I've learned so much from you about focus and, you know, really bringing love to the table and building relationships. And namaste. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank everyone. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Okay, bye.
Bye.